Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association.
Deb Bright is founder and president of Bright Enterprises Incorporated, a consulting firm devoted to enhancing performance. Her roster of clients includes Raytheon, Marriott, Disney, GE, Chase, Morgan Stanley, and other premier organizations. She's the author of The Truth Doesn't Have to Hurt: How to Use Criticism to Strengthen Relationships, Improve Performance, and Promote Change. It's published by AMACOM, a division of the American Management Association. Deb, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Let's just jump into the topic. Currently, there seems to be a stigma associated with even the use of the word criticism in the business marketplace out there. What has contributed to criticism's bad reputation?
Well, I think when it comes to criticism's bad reputation, if you ask people, most of them think of criticism as something negative. I mean, it conjures up this idea of dislike, rejection, thumbs down, personal bashing. And I think that that negativity just continues throughout the workplace. For example, I even have clients who don't even allow us to use the word criticism in the workplace. So that just feeds into this bad reputation. And I think what continues to perpetuate that bad reputation is that people really are not skilled in the topic area. If people were skilled in the topic of criticism, you will find that it's motivational because it's helping somebody to do something better. And, I mean, just think about it a minute. Wouldn't you want to work in a workplace where there's open communications and you didn't have to second-guess what somebody said to you? And so it's that kind of understanding and the skill that's necessary to create an environment where people can give each other quality information. I mean, I think of people that we trust. And when we trust someone, we have this belief that this person is going to tell us if we're doing something wrong, and we cherish that because criticism is the closest thing to honest, truthful information.
Synonyms such as feedback, caring confrontation, or appreciative feedback have become accepted substitutes for the word criticism. But why do they all fail to capture the true complexity of this vitally helpful tool of communications?
I'm hesitating because, you know, there's just no synonym for criticism. Organizations try to use the word feedback as a substitute and paint over the word criticism, but that is misleading. It's led to a lot of confusion in the workplace, even this idea of critical conversations. I mean, if I'm going into a critical conversation, am I getting something important or am I getting criticized, yet we masquerade the word. So it's led to a lot of confusion in the workplace. Feedback is not criticism. Feedback means I'm just giving you information. With criticism, it implies that you need to change. And if you don't change, there's real or imagined consequences. So we really are misleading people in the workplace. The other thing that gets me really frustrated is we have management talking about the whole idea of being transparent, promoting trust and respect in an organization, and authentic, and yet these are the pillars that the organization is trying to promote, yet they won't even call criticism what it is. It really just breeds a lot of mistrust and it loses credibility among management. And so the reason I use the term criticism in the book is because it is what it is. And the reason it's gotten such a bad reputation, as we both talked about, is because people are really not skilled. We talk about performance review training, yet I think the topic of giving criticism is brushed over. And the big mistake that we've made is that we haven't trained receivers on how to be receptive receivers.
All right, so let's get in on the ground floor here. In an effort to better understand criticism, what is the purpose of criticism?
The purpose of criticism is to give somebody information to help them do something better. And that information is rooted in negativity. And that's where I think it also gets that bad reputation, because people don't necessarily wake up in the morning and say, oh boy, I can't wait to get criticized. Yet, skillfully done by a giver with a receptive receiver, its purpose is to help that individual do something better, achieve goals, grow personally or professionally, and who isn't interested in that? So many people come into the workplace wanting to grow and develop, and we don't tap into understanding the part that criticism plays in achieving that important goal for many young millennials coming into the workplace. And it's interesting, when we talk about the purpose of criticism, though, it can be hurtful. And that's what makes this a complex subject, because sometimes criticism is meant to annihilate somebody's self-esteem or rattle their self-confidence. And so that goes back to the importance of being skilled as a receiver on how to sort out helpful information or quality criticism from criticism that's really poorly delivered or meant to be hurtful. And I'm thinking of a woman that I interviewed. It's an off-the-job example, just to show you how hurtful criticism can be. And it was on her wedding day. I mean, all through her life, her mother was telling her how ugly she was and, you know, and how unattractive. Well, on her wedding day, she bought her own wedding dress. And she was looking in the mirror and saying to herself how lovely and beautiful she looked on this very special day. And her mother walked over to her and said to her, "My goodness, you look awful in that dress." It absolutely crushed her. So that's the reason people really need to be skilled in the subject of criticism, both from a giver perspective as well as from a receiver perspective. And I have to stop a minute, Dave, because, you know, when you write a book on the subject of criticism, I think sometimes people think that you're really trying to promote criticism in the workplace. And the answer is no, I am not trying to promote criticism in the workplace. What I am trying to promote is that it is inevitable. You cannot escape criticism. I mean, I even had one gentleman in a workshop saying to me, "Well, if I don't say anything in a meeting, then I can't be criticized." And as soon as he said it, you know, he paused and he reflected and said, "Oh my gosh, I'll get criticized for not contributing or saying anything in the meeting." You cannot escape this subject. And so what we want to, and what the book achieves to do, is to give givers and receivers the skills they need to be able to be eloquent communicators and have productive conversations where you're ending up building trust and respect with one another, besides helping to move things forward and get better results.
Okay. When engaged in a criticism exchange, who's actually in control?
Well, that's such an interesting question that I'm not sure many people think about. And when I ask audiences that question, I usually get about a 50-50. 50% of the people think it's the giver who's in control, because they most likely are thinking it's the boss. And then you get another 50% saying it's the receiver. When you step back and you look at it, it's actually the receiver who's in control. And as soon as you say that, everybody in the audience goes, "Oh, that's right. No wonder the giver is contemplating and mulling over whether to say anything or how to say something," because a giver instinctually knows that once that giver opens his mouth or her mouth, the control shifts to the receiver, because it's the receiver who can agree or disagree with the giver. They can also challenge the giver, and most frustrating of all for givers, it's the receiver who can decide whether or not to do anything about the situation. And so it's the receiver who has the control. The challenge is that most receivers do not have enough understanding of how to utilize that control to really benefit when on the receiving end of criticism.
When it comes to giving criticism, what are the three common mistakes made by givers?
Oh, well, there's lots of common mistakes givers make, because I want our listening audience to think about this. Where did you learn how to give and receive criticism? How old is it? And can you rely on what you've learned to give you consistent positive results. For many of us, we really haven't received any formal training on the subject of giving criticism, or receiving for that matter. And then those of us that have had some training, what I've seen from some lesson plans, they're really getting faulty information, which only further fuels this confusion that exists in the topic area. So if we were just to touch on just a couple of common mistakes that are made, one of them is because it's uncomfortable to give criticism. I don't think givers strive to get comfortable. That's not the objective. The objective is to be effective. But because they're so uncomfortable, there's a tendency to deliver the criticism according to what makes them feel comfortable or how they would like it. That's really not effective. What givers really need to do is to deliver the criticism according to a management expression that I think those of us who've been in management for a while know, that you need to treat others the way they want or need to be treated. And if givers work with that important premise, then you will want to know how best to approach a receiver so they don't take it the wrong way and deliver that message so that it's most appealing to that receiver so they'll listen. And if people are delivering criticism according to how they would like it to be delivered, then they're overlooking another important management expression that says different strokes for different folks. Then that brings up another common mistake that givers make, and that is they follow this, I guess organizations call it the Oreo cookie approach or the sandwich approach. Many of them have been taught start positive, move negative, and end positive. Well, that with the research that we've done on this topic area, one needs to be very cautious when using this because, for starters, what we found from the research, because as you know, this book is all based on research findings where we found significant differences in givers' ability to give criticism effectively as well as for receivers to receive criticism. We found, for example, in the research that if you start off positive, the receiver oftentimes is not hearing the criticism because they're glorifying the positive. Then again, we found others said that they really don't acknowledge the positive because they're waiting for the magical axe of the but to come crashing down. So you're already losing that receiver. But what really bothers me that I want our listening audience to be aware of is that if you truly do believe in the need to treat others the way they want or need to be treated, then think about what happens if you start positive, move negative, and end positive. You are approaching it like a robot and not acknowledging the uniqueness or the preferences of the individual, and you just, you know, go through step one, step two, step three, and it becomes ineffective in the big picture. And I'm thinking, if that's the regular approach that givers use, oftentimes behind the scenes, they're going to hear receivers or other coworkers talking to one another saying, yeah, did you go in to talk to the boss? Yeah, yeah, did he start positive? Yeah, me too. Did he go negative? Yeah, yeah, me too. And you just lose a lot of credibility. That's a common mistake that givers really need to pay attention to. And then I guess another one is that givers fail to show value when giving criticism. I think they assume by pointing out what the person's doing wrong that they will automatically understand what to do to correct it and that they will see the value in it. Here's a good example. You have a manager who is saying to an employee, you know, you're 10 minutes late for meetings. You need to be on time. That's typically how a manager might approach an employee, but watch the difference when they put value with the criticism. So in casual conversations, let's say that this manager has talked to the employee and has learned that the employee really places a lot of importance on being respected by their fellow colleagues. And they really want to be viewed as someone who has the best interest of the company in mind and not their own personal interest. So with that information, the manager approaches the employee and says, you talk to me about the importance of respect and making sure that others see you as always wanting to add value to the organization. How do you think it looks when you come 10 and maybe sometimes 15 minutes late to meetings. Now, the employee has their interest piqued because the boss is talking about something that's important to them. And so what we're doing when we give criticism is not simply pointing out what the person isn't doing. What we want to do is inspire that person to want to bring about a change in behavior and look at it as helpful information. So those are just a few common mistakes that givers make.
All right, so let's flip this and ask, what's the most important thing for receivers to do when they're on the receiving end of criticism?
Well, the most important thing for receivers to do is to remember they're in control when on the receiving end of criticism. And it's utilizing that control that's very important. So, for example, I'm not sure many receivers pay attention to how they listen, but they have a lot of control on how they listen as the receiver. So, for example, when somebody's criticizing them, are they listening more for how it's being delivered and the word choices? Or are they paying more attention to what is being said? And I try to make sure I emphasize that receivers really need to pay attention to what is being said, because most givers are unskilled and are going to be kind of crude in their delivery, so they got to get past how and the, you know, their tone of voice and their word choices and really try to understand what is this giver telling you. And then from there, it's utilizing that control of being a good listener to determine the difference between good quality criticism and poor quality criticism. Am I getting good information? I think most receivers are going to want to make sure they have all the specifics and facts, because that's what most givers have been taught too. Have your facts, have your facts. And so receivers want examples. That validates the criticism. But I'll give you something interesting, Dave. What happens when you deal in today's times when you have employees who are working remotely and the boss doesn't see them? And then they need to say something to the employee. Oftentimes they may not have examples. So receivers really need to be careful and think about what this boss or person, could be a team member, is saying to them. And consider, for example, if a boss is saying to an employee that I have heard that you've sent out some memos and that, you know, you've got some misspellings and grammatical errors and you really need to be a better writer and take more time to express your ideas more accurately and to be grammatically correct. And if the employee is saying, give me examples, and the boss says, I can't, does that mean the receiver is going to reject? Because the receiver can reject the information at any point. After all, they're in control. But if they step back and look at the big picture, maybe it's not a bad idea to focus in on writing more clearly and using good grammar. I mean, that's not bad. I mean, one really may need to do that if they want to advance up in an organization, or maybe write letters to friends or family relatives. So one's got to really carefully be able to scrutinize the information they are receiving, because that is all they are getting. And as a receiver, you can reject it at any point. So there are guidelines. So I think that's what I'm trying to say. When you're on the giving side or whether you're on the receiving side, and it can switch instantly, you really need to be skilled. There are guidelines that receivers and givers can learn and use, because criticism doesn't end just at the workplace. It carries home with us, with our friends, our families, our relatives, our loved ones. So it's an integral part of life that we've just kind of masqueraded over and said, oh, this is bad, it's terrible. Yet I just have to take a little tangent here, because, you know, when you go for a lesson, whether it's a golf lesson or if you're trying to learn to use your smartphone and you go to a class, in that kind of setting, I think if we paid money for those lessons and no one told us anything that we were doing wrong, or in our mind we would probably translate into how we could do something better, we would question whether we got our money's worth. But why is it in the workplace, if we get criticized, it's this awful, terrible thing? So, you know, we've really done a number on employees in the workplace to get them to think that criticism is such a bad thing.
Well, criticism can be very hurtful. What can receivers do to avoid personalizing the criticism?
Well, interestingly, that's something that came out from the research where people did learn how to be able to avoid personalizing, and when we really delved into it, we found it's learning how to de-emotionalize. Your listeners can ask themselves, when they're receiving end of criticism, do they just get so intimidated they can't think and they just get so upset and they speak first and regret it later, or they get defensive right away? So there really are skills to learn how to be an effective receiver. And one of the things that we talk about and described in the book that showed to make a significant difference and was of great value to our experimental control group participants who were in the study was working with quick charges. And these are techniques that I developed years ago that are used instantly in situations for greater self-control. No one can tell when you're using these skills and you're not dependent on others in order for them to work effectively. And just to give your listeners an idea of how you can learn to put criticism in perspective on the fly when it's happening right then and there, is to practice one of my favorite quick charges, because I use this all the time too, because I'm not exempt from being criticized. It's called the 2M simultaneous focus quick charge. Remember, it's used instantly and no one can tell that you're using it. And the way you practice the 2M simultaneous focus quick charge is to understand that the first M is the micro, the more immediate or short term. The second M is the macro or the bigger picture, hence the 2M. And what you want to do is like a camera lens, you want to have both into view simultaneously. So while you have your close-up lens, you want to open it up so you can see the big picture at the same time. So how do you use this when you're on the receiving end of criticism? You want to imagine being in the micro is when somebody's criticizing you. You want to zoom out to the macro picture and get the big picture at that very moment. And you want to think to yourself, am I perfect? And if you're like most people, you'll very quickly come to the conclusion that the answer is no, I'm only human. Well, then at that moment, you can give yourself permission to have made a mistake and zoom back into the micro and listen to what the person is telling you. Or you're in the micro, somebody's criticizing you, you zoom out to the macro picture, and you say to yourself, you know what? Fact. At least this person is taking the time to say something. The easiest thing in today's time is to avoid the hassle and say nothing at all. So at least they're taking the time. I might not like how they're saying it or what word choices they're using, but at least they're taking the time. And then you can zoom back into the micro. And at that point, you can decide, because you have the control, you don't have to say anything. Just because somebody's talking to you doesn't mean you have to respond. You have control. So you could turn around to the giver and say, you know what, rather than say something I regret, as I have done in the past, can I just listen? Because the receivers can always come back at another time and deal with the situation. As you can see, Dave, we really do have a lot of control as a receiver, and there's more. People don't know how to utilize that control.
What are the key factors in getting people to accept criticism and act on it?
Well, I think we've been talking about some of the key things that givers need to do. I think probably for the giver, which we haven't talked about, and we've been saying that the receiver's in control, probably our listeners are wondering, well, where does the control lie for the giver? If the receiver's in control after the giver opens their mouth, where does the control for the giver lie? Well, it's in proper preparation. Givers need to get in the habit, and we all develop habits. Givers need to get in the habit of thinking before they speak, because once they open their mouth, the control shifts to the receiver. And so if givers think and make sure that their intent is to be positive, then they will most likely formulate the words, deliver the message, so the receiver views it as helpful and they have a productive exchange. I'll give you another thing that many givers don't think about that I believe really contributes to having criticism accepted. And that is, after the giver delivers the information that's rooted in negativity, they want to involve the receiver in the conversation on how to take corrective action. What's the message that we're sending to a receiver if we engage him in the conversation about how to fix it? And your listeners will realize that what we're doing is we're simply saying it's a mistake, and I believe in you, and let's figure this thing out. So now it becomes a problem solving where you're showing respect to the receiver. I oftentimes find givers continually talking and telling the receiver what to do. And at that point, it's almost like sending a message that, you know, you can't figure it out, so I got to tell you everything. And for seasoned employees who have been around for a long time, it really is an annoying factor and just turns off receivers because we're all capable of making mistakes. And so engaging them is a real important practice. You know what else also helps with the acceptance? Is if, and many people don't think about this, is it the giver's responsibility to make the receiver feel comfortable? Or is it the receiver's responsibility to make the giver feel comfortable? The answer to that, I don't know what you were thinking, Dave, but the answer to that is it's the receiver. The receiver needs to make that giver feel comfortable. And when you think about it, of course it makes sense. In today's environment where there's too much to do and too little time to get everything done, if a giver runs into a receiver who is defensive, argumentative, and a hassle to deal with, that giver is going to put it on the lowest end of their priority list and may never deliver the message. So the receiver needs to make a giver feel comfortable. So, number one, they're going to get the information. But number two is that they're bringing out the best in a giver. Because as we said before, a giver is not comfortable giving criticism. So those are just a couple of things that I think really help to make sure that you've got a productive exchange going on.
Okay, so what are some things we should look for in deciding whether to accept or reject criticism?
Well, what we're talking about are receivers. And one of the things that I think receivers are really questioning is the intent meant to help, or is the intent behind the criticism meant to hurt or have some other purpose? And that's really a challenge for receivers, and that's again why we really want to utilize our control to be able to decipher good quality criticism from poor quality criticism where it's not helpful. And when it comes to intent, when interviewing a number of people, many of them said, I can't give you the specifics. All I know is I can tell when it's happening. And I think people's gut feeling is probably a pretty good source. I will tell you one that causes one to really question whether this criticism is meant to help or has some other agenda, and that is if when they're delivering the criticism, they compare you to a known enemy in the organization, or if it's right before you're going into an important meeting, whether it's a presentation or whether you're meeting with customers, and they deliver the criticism right before it. Those are not good signals. Receivers need to be careful because they may conclude that that person who's giving the criticism that way has some ulterior motive, but it could be because they're just totally unskilled and they just are not considering timing or not realizing the impact of their message. The intent is something that I think receivers really want to pay attention to. And they could turn around and ask the giver, help me understand, where are you coming from on this? A real hard statement, I wouldn't recommend this, but some people get to the point where they're willing to risk it all. They could turn around and say, you know, your purpose right now is what? So there are, and I talk about different ways to respond to that on a varying scale to help people understand that you really just don't have to be a victim when you're on the receiving end of criticism. And I guess really the most important thing that receivers need is to be able to know what it is they need to do to correct the situation to move forward. And that doesn't have to be something that is done right then and there, because sometimes, you know, receivers will run into givers who say, well, I don't know, you figure it out. and then the receiver once again feels like a victim and they don't know what to do, well, they have the control. They can think about what is the action that they need to be taking, and then they can always go back to the giver and say to the giver, if I do this and this and this, is that what you had in mind, and would that correct the situation, or would that get us moving forward, or would that change my branding? So receivers aren't victims, but they need to know that desired action, and the nugget, the golden nugget, is that the receiver needs to know it from the giver's perspective, not their own. Because remember, most givers are not eloquent in their delivery of criticism. Most of them are crude, so receivers need to make sure they're doing a good job of inspecting information.
So, Deb, exactly who or whom should we accept criticism from?
Well, the most obvious one would be people we trust and respect. That's who we're going to accept criticism from. Then you can look at people's roles, like your boss or a close friend or a coach. These are people we would hopefully want to accept criticism from. It's interesting, though, because our attitude plays a big part in whether or not we're going to accept criticism. And a good example is the following. I want you to think to yourself, do you have a good attitude towards criticism? In other words, do you view criticism as something positive? Now, think again. Do you really think you can get something beneficial from criticism? And if you say yes a second time, then very quickly let me ask you, will you accept criticism from somebody you do not respect? Because receivers are in control and all they're getting is information, they need to develop the skills of how to very quickly decipher information that they're getting to see if it's helpful or not. And that's the skill that they learn within the book.
And my last question to you is, what's the difference between criticism and just plain bashing?
Well, see, the question when it comes to bashing is, what's the purpose? If the purpose of criticism is to help somebody do something better or achieve goals or grow personally or professionally, then bashing doesn't even fit within the spectrum of criticism. It has some other purpose, and oftentimes bashing is just simply meant to be destructive. And criticism and bashing, or I should say helpful criticism and bashing, have nothing to do with one another.
We've been speaking to Deb Bright. She's author of a phenomenal new book entitled The Truth Doesn't Have to Hurt: How to Use Criticism to Strengthen Relationships, Improve Performance, and Promote Change. Deb, thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, you're welcome. It was just such a pleasure to work with you, Dave. Thanks a lot.
AMA webinars provide 90 minutes of focused how-to instruction and specific solutions for solving your most pressing work issues. For $149, you'll participate in an in-depth course taught by an expert who will answer your questions and guide you through the process a step at a time. For a complete schedule of upcoming AMA webinars, visit our events calendar at amanet.org/events. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.